WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, my beautiful brothers and sisters? Hope everybody had a beautiful weekend. It was so much that happened in the world of sports, and you know what? How about that Floyd Mayweather fight? Good fight. I actually, we ordered it at my apartment, had a few buddies over to check out the fight, and man, was it a good one. Finally, we had an entertaining fight from Floyd Mayweather, the first fight I've seen that was that entertaining from the man in quite some time, dating back to his early career. Marcos Maidana was no joke, folks. No joke. And as you guys know, we talked about the fight here on Friday, on the eve of May-per-view, before Floyd got in the ring with Maidana. And we gave our predictions. I predicted, you know, Maidana would come away with the win. In the end, it was a typical result. Mayweather going 12, going the distance, and him winning by a decision. One judge actually had the fight tied. The other two had Mayweather winning as he caps on 46-0 right now. The fight was so good, in fact, that afterwards Mayweather gave high praise to Maidana, you know, saying, "Normally I just blow guys out, but finally I had a true competitor who pushed me to the brink." Maidana, of course, even cut Mayweather, early in the round the third round, and it looked pretty even. Looked pretty even through six. Some people even had Maidana winning the fight, but Mayweather certainly came through with it in the end. And now a rematch is now in the talks for these two, which I would certainly love to see. Finally, we got our money's worth when it comes to Mayweather. It was a great fight. So we'll talk about it, dive into it. I was wrong. Yes, I admit I was wrong. Took a lot of heat, too, throughout those 12 rounds. Those 12 rounds for me seemed like an eternity as all my homies started to, you know, talk a lot of trash and go crazy when they would show the replays of Mayweather hitting Maidana. It was a fun time, though. The Kentucky Derby also took place, though, folks. The NBA playoffs. So much to talk about on the show. And you know what? You can call in and give your thoughts on it throughout this entire hour. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We will also talk a little Michigan State baseball in just a minute as the MSU men's baseball team, they try to get back on track after a pretty disappointing weekend, to say the least. Chris Solari, who is the beat writer for the MSU baseball team and Michigan State sports in general, he will join me at 1:15 p.m., so you want to definitely hear his insights as the Spartan baseball team. It's kind of a cool transitionary phase into this season and pretty lucky for the MSU baseball team, seeing as though the top eight seeds in the Big Ten will make the postseason. So the Spartans normally, if this had been in past seasons, they wouldn't be in the playoff talk right now at all. But since they sit in seventh place, the top eight teams make it, they are still in those talks, folks, even though this season has certainly been a roller coaster ride for this team. So Chris is going to break it down for us and talk about the future of the team as they dwindle down the season. The MSU softball team wraps up their season. We'll show you how they finish it off on the eve of the Big Ten tournament. And so much more. 517-355-9527. All right. Let's waste no time. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 5th, 2014. Again, Spartan baseball team, a three-run bottom of the ninth inning gave Illinois a 10-9 victory over Michigan State in the series finale yesterday afternoon in Champaign, Illinois. The top five hitters in the Spartan order all had at least two hits, led by Joel Fisher, who went 3-for-3 with four RBI. So good outing for Joel. Now, MSU's starting pitcher, Cam Vicks, he's tossed six complete innings, allowing three runs off six hits. And Michigan State will play a pair of non-conference games this week, traveling to Western Michigan on Tuesday and then hosting EMU on Wednesday. So we'll see how all that plays out. Again, we'll have Chris Solari, who is the MSU baseball beat writer for the Lansing State Journal. He'll be joining me at 1:15 to break down the MSU baseball season thus far and talk about the future of the squad as they wind down the season. And for the MSU softball team, they have now lost seven straight to close out the regular season this weekend. A three-game sweep against Northwestern over the weekend capped things off. Now, the Spartans will be the number 12 seed in the next next week's Big Ten tournament, which will bring MSU right back to Evanston, Illinois, next weekend. Now, Northwestern finishes fifth with a 14-9 Big Ten record. The two teams are slated to meet in the first round of the Big Ten tourney on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be their first ever night game in the history of Sharon J. Drysdale Field. So that should be an entertaining one. The Tigers, how about the Tigers? They are so hot right now, and I mean steaming hot. They have won five straight, folks, five straight. Everyone in Sunday's lineup yesterday contributed to a 16-hit compilation, and the only starter who had neither a run scored nor an RBI was just Victor Martinez, who has been the Tigers' best hitter this season. Now, the streak began way back in Chicago the night that the Tigers didn't have an extra base hit and Brian Holiday bunted home the winner. In this three-game sweep now, the Tigers had more extra base hits than the Kansas City Royals had with 18 compared to 19. Can you believe that? It's unbelievable stuff. Now, it's time for a four-game series with the Houston Astros, who have the league's highest team ERA at 4.94. So we'll see if the Tigers can continue this and break down how in the world they've been able to compile this unbelievable five straight streak. It's pretty impressive, very impressive, especially looking at yesterday. I mean, my goodness, they were certainly just in a zone. All right, and the Kentucky Derby, folks. How about the Kentucky Derby? Always a great time watching the fastest 2 minutes in sports history. Race favorite, California Chrome. I tell you, this horse is something else with a very cool name, California Chrome. That's just a sweet nickname, okay? He took home Saturday's 140th Kentucky Derby, giving the 77-year-old trainer Art Sherman his first win at Churchill Downs. Now, starting from the number six position, California Chrome began to pull away in the race and won by 1 3/4 lengths. He was a great, I mean, I tell you, this horse, too, he just eats up the spotlight, too. I mean, he was posing before he even took the track for the race, and, you know, gums are shining. I mean, he's playing to the camera. And the horse has a great personality. Now, owners Steve Colburn and Perry Martin weren't surprised at their horse's success and see more coming in the future. He was the favorite. Now, I said our horse would win the Kentucky Derby, and when he wins, I believe this horse will win the Triple Crown. I told people, I said this colt will go down in history because he's going to be the first California-bred horse to win the Triple Crown. So that's high praise and high expectation for California Chrome. But, boy, what an outing to start that Triple Crown, adventure. So, wow, it was a great race, the horse certainly deserves it. He's very, very impressive. All right, Mayweather. Yes, Floyd Mayweather, really quickly. Despite being hit the most times in his career and having an undefeated record appear in jeopardy, Floyd improved to 46-0 Saturday, beating Marcos Maidana in a majority decision. Mayweather looked human for the first time in several fights, folks, landing 230 of 426 blows, which is about 54%, while the constantly attacking Maidana connected on 221 of 858%, which is 26%. A vast difference when you talk about the connections and the amount of just punches thrown. Maidana certainly the aggressor right out of the gates. He actually threw over 100 punches in the first round alone. It was unbelievable. Now, two judges had Mayweather winning, while Michael Pernick ruled a 114-114 tie. Now, Floyd, still undefeated, hinted at a rematch either late this year or next. Quote, if the fans want to see it again, we'll do it again. And, well, again, we're going to talk about that fight and kind of break it down. It was the first time I've seen Floyd again. He looked human, folks. He looked human. Maidana, a very impressive fighter, pushed him to the brink. The first time we've seen that in quite some time. We want to break that fight down, and you can weigh in on it by dialing 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And you know what? After the fight, something pretty interesting ensued. It wasn't just the fighters nursing injuries after Saturday night's fight in Vegas. A falling partition mistaken for gunshots incited a complete fiasco, and a stampede broke out at the MGM Grand. Can you believe that? Over 50 people reportedly treated for injuries and 24 transported to hospitals. Now, the fallen partition, which is part of a Starbucks in a food court near the Grand Garden Arena, that's what triggered panic For those leaving the fighting caused several to be trampled over. Most injuries were minor, but thank goodness, I tell you, thank goodness it wasn't serious to the point where, you know, people had critical injuries. So you got to watch yourself, though, being in a big crowd like that. But, you know, that was certainly a newsmaker right after that fight. I couldn't believe that. And, you know, we talked about Jay Leon Love. We had Ali Easley on here Friday. We talk about Jay Leon Love, the Inkster, Michigan native, who was, you know, is definitely a very impressive young fighter who was a part of the Money Team, who fought on the undercard during Saturday's Mayweather and Maidana fight. Now, again, Jay Leon, he won a 10-round unanimous decision over Marco Antonio Pierbin. Love, a super middleweight from Inkster, Michigan, overcame heavy shots to the chin and took over the fight as quickly as it seemed to have gotten away from him. Now, Amir Khan, Adrian Broner, and Floyd, all winners in the fight on Saturday that aired on Showtime. And, you know, Adrian, he looked pretty weary at the start of the fight and came through with the win, same as Love. Amir Khan, you know, he looked very good. And a lot of people were slated Amir Khan as Floyd's next competitor, depending on how the outcome transitioned between Maidana and Floyd. So now we're probably going to see a rematch here. Amir Khan may have to wait, seeing as though it was a very impressive outing from Marco. So we'll see how that transitions. And, you know, Jameis Winston, who we talked about most of last week due to his crab leg incident, Jameis Winston has been reinstated to Florida State's baseball team after being suspended following a shoplift incident. Now, the Heisman Trophy winner was issued a civil citation and entered a program that required 20 hours of community service. Now, he was issued the citation last Tuesday after he walked out of a supermarket without paying for $32 worth of crab legs and crawfish. Come on, Jameis. Winston is the closer on the baseball team, and missed the three-game series against Minnesota this weekend. He also, of course, led the Florida State Seminoles on the football field all the way to a national championship and also a Heisman Trophy winner. So, Jameis Winston, he's back playing baseball after that hilarious crawfish incident, crab legs and crawfish incident. So it's good that he's back out there. Hopefully he can put – finally, Jameis, just stay focused, brother. That's all I'm saying. Just please stay focused. All right, in Oregon State – has fired men's basketball coach Craig Robinson. Robinson was 93-104 in 6 years at Oregon State with no NCAA tournament appearances. The Beavers were 16-16 last season and will lose all five starters. Robinson had 3 more years remaining on his contract, and the university is expected to owe him more than $4 million. So, you know, this story is pretty interesting, seeing as though he has a pretty interesting tie with our president, Barack Obama. So Craig, I mean, you know, kind of a lackluster performance for him, but, you know, they've decided to let him go, and I'm certain he'll find a job. He's not a bad coach. He'll probably find a job somewhere else. So, all right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, our phone lines are open this entire hour, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 and share anything that's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Well, let's get to our guest for today's show. Of course, we just kind of mentioned the MSU men's baseball team who was swept against Illinois over the weekend. And we have a man who knows a thing or two about the MSU baseball team. He is the Michigan State sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal and is here to talk about this team. Chris Solari, welcome to today's show. Hey, thanks a lot for joining me today, Chris.
Hey, anytime, Al. How are you doing today?
Very, very well, man. Well, let's dive right into it, Chris. Right now, the MSU baseball team currently sits at 24-20, seventh place in the Big Ten at 8-10. Again, a weekend sweep versus Illinois. Chris, I want to ask you, what went wrong this weekend, and what's the psyche of this team right now? Because it's got to be pretty interesting, seeing as though this is the first time, I believe, that the top eight teams in preparation for Maryland and Rutgers next year with the expansion, but the top eight teams still have playoff, postseason hopes, I should say, still alive. So now they're sitting at seventh place, but they still know that they can close out the season strong.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously the goal is to finish in that top eight and get to Omaha for the Big Ten tournament, where it'll be held for the first time this year. And really, the way that the season has been throughout the Big Ten, a lot of teams beating each other and a lot of close games, especially for Michigan State. And I think you saw that this weekend at Illinois. You know, the bullpen really was kind of the betrayer this weekend. They lost a late lead in the first game of the weekend, and then went to extra innings in the second game on Saturday and lost there. And then, and that was after scoring three runs and looking like they were going to come back and win it. And then Illinois answered. And then yesterday, you know, similar situation, had a big lead going late into the game and the bullpen betrayed them. So, you know, it's been an up and down kind of season. The starting pitching has been very good for the most part. Between Mick Van Voss and Justin Allman and now Cam View. They've got a pretty solid weekend rotation. They struggled during the week, which is when you play your non-conference games, that's where you have to really do some damage there to build RPI and strength of schedule points, which Michigan State saw during their NCAA run. They were excellent during those games, so they've struggled with that. They've struggled to get timely hitting. You know, the top of the order with especially Blaise Salter and Jimmy Pickens, those two guys in the heart of the order, plus Cam Gibbs and Anthony Cecchi. You know, your top four or five hitters have produced pretty well, but below them, they really haven't had much. You know, it's been a struggle with the absolute back end of the lineup to get constant production. So, you know, it hasn't been one thing. It's just been a myriad of things for why they're hovering so poorly right now, you know, right around that 500 mark.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly true. And for you, because you've been covering this team all season, Chris, at the beginning of the season, talking with Boss and the other players on this team, I mean, those expectations and where they sat compared to possibly if they've shifted at all, I have no idea. But asking you, has it been pretty surprising for you, and did you expect this roller coaster of a ride looking at what has transitioned so far for this team?
I think the biggest question marks that I had coming into this season were with the starting pitchers and the bullpen. I think we've seen pretty much all season, we've seen the pitching has been pretty good. Like I said, this weekend has been kind of an aberration with the pitching, especially the bullpen kind of unraveling a little bit. But for the most part, the pitching's been solid. What surprised me has been the production in a lineup that really returned everybody from last season.
And, right, right.
You know, the runs per game dropped. And the other thing that has been better as of late, but early in the year was really problematic, was the defense, the team defense. I mean, you know, they're still averaging more than an error a game, 1.25 errors per game.
Wow.
44 games. And, you know, that's not Jake Boss's style. Jake Boss, he preaches the fundamentals, both in terms of fielding and base running, and you've seen base running mistakes from this team that they don't normally make. You know, ground ball to the left side, guys trying to advance on it and getting thrown out at third base. Just little things like that, and you know, it's one of those things where you can see the talent. You can see the talent, especially with the pitching staff, and you can see the talent in those big bats in the order. It's a matter of putting everything together all at once. This team really hasn't been able to do that.
Right, that is certainly true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Chris Solari, MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal, who has been covering for the MSU men's baseball team all year long. Points of encouragement right now for this team, Chris. You mentioned, you know, the top of that batting order has really been producing, guys batting over 300, like a Blaise Salter, a Jimmy Pickens, even Cam Gibson. I mean, that's got to be points to build on. But how does Boss try to get things going? And, you know, talking with him throughout this weekend, I mean, does he seem kind of frustrated right now?
I would think so. You know, he's been frustrated pretty much all year with the inability to score runs. And again, you know, now you look at what they did. They scored four runs in two games a piece, you know, eight runs over the first two games of the series, and then nine runs in the last game, and they still can't get a victory. So the runs are starting to come around, and now the bullpen unravels. If it's not one thing, it's another. And if that doesn't frustrate a coach, I don't know what does.
Right, exactly.
But I think probably one of the biggest things that, you know, for the next couple weeks here, you know, when you look at this team and you know, they've got one home series left with Nebraska this upcoming weekend, Saturday through Monday, plus one more home game against Eastern Michigan on Wednesday. And, you know, there's six Big Ten games left and nine games in all on their schedule. I think what needs to be really emphasized is just how short and finite things can be for these kids. And, you know, the guys like Pickens and Salter, you know, even a senior like Joel Fisher, they're all really, you know, getting long in their tooth, if you will, by college standards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've been playing together for so long, it seems like now. But especially got the Pickens and Salter and Mick Van Vossen, there's a good chance that they could be drafted in pro ball by the end of this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So the chance to keep this team and this that kind of a potent middle of the lineup together is dwindling. And, you know, that's something that Jake Boss, in some ways, should allude to, that time's winding down. Time is really winding down for that. And, you know, that's something that this program has thrived off of with those guys in the heart of the order. So whether or not they can put it together here, I guess it's remains to be seen, but the talent certainly is there.
So, Chris, in saying that, do you kind of sense a mood of, I don't like to use this word ever, but panic in a way?
No, I don't think it's panic. I think there's still frustration more than anything.
Okay.
You know, and the midweek games that they've got coming up, they've got three left. They've got Tuesday, they are at Western Michigan. Wednesday, they're at Eastern Michigan. And the following Tuesday is the Clash of Comerica against Central Michigan. Central Michigan has given them fits this year. To get a win over Central Michigan, especially in Detroit, and to have a good showing against a strong Nebraska team would go a long ways to building some confidence, because, you know, this you're talking about two sweeps in the last three weekends between Illinois and Indiana, and that's something that, you know, also is kind of a little out of the ordinary for this program over Jake Boss's tenure. They've usually been right there, and, you know, you look at those games, that's six losses, and four of them were by one run, and you know, that's something that those close games, they got to be able to start to turn those. That's the only way that this season, especially when you get into that elimination setting in the Big Ten tournament.
Right, that's so true. For you, Chris, I mean, looking at the schedule as you just mentioned and kind of broke down things for us, how do you see this team closing out the season?
Well, I think the one thing that's positive again is the starting pitching. That's always going to be your biggest thing, especially when you get into a tournament setting. And Michigan State saw that a few years ago back when they were in Columbus. The lack of depth in starting pitching really ended up costing them when they went into the loser's bracket. I don't think that's necessarily the case here. I mean, obviously, guys' arms do get used a little bit more in those tournaments than anywhere else.
Mm.
So they have to be ready for that. But, again, when you have some depth in starting pitching and you have some bullpen guys who can perform in long relief roles, I think that's critical, especially in a tournament setting. Again, the key is that the lineup, the bottom half of that lineup, really needs to come together and become serviceable. Because right now, you know, when you look at it, it's been inconsistent at best. Getting consistent at bats is something that they really need.
Ladies and gents, the Spartans currently sit in seventh place as the season winds down. We'll see what transpires, and hopefully they can make the Big Ten tournament and go from there. All right, Chris, before I let you go, I want to mention the spring game here. Of course, you know, it was pretty. It's always pretty interesting for me watching the spring game, because you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, because players are out there. You know, no one's trying to kill each other out there. It's still a spring game. It's a lot of entertainment for the fans who come out. But you kind of see a pretty cool preview of what this MSU football team will look like personnel-wise next season. What things stuck out for you watching that spring game last week?
Yeah, I think anytime you have a mascot getting a carry in game, it kind of tells you exactly where the level of importance is to the program.
Right.
It is a showcase, and I think that's the big thing. And obviously, you know, when you don't have the offensive line put together in a complete unit, that alters so much of what you see from the offensive side and really from the defensive line side.
Yeah, right.
I think the thing that I thought really stood out was the secondary. And, you know, I guess, of course, Michigan State's quarterbacks were under a little more duress than they would be if under a full first-string offensive line. But the defensive backs made strong plays on the ball and showed that there might not be as much drop-off as people think with the loss of Isaiah Lewis and Darqueus Dennard. I think that you're seeing some guys that are really step up. There's going to be competition at that safety spot to replace Lewis. And I don't think anything's secure yet at the cornerback either. I think both of those guys have had good springs and you know, mm-hmm. Darian Hicks looks good. And, you know, there's still Ezra Robinson out there. I mean, there's some talent. There's mm-hmm. definite depth and talent to that secondary that really is the hallmark of Mark D'Antonio's program. I mean, to be able to shut down the pass in this day and age, the way that they've been able to do it, to me, it's been the most impressive thing, and it looks like it's going to continue.
Yeah, it does. It's amazing how they just keep on cranking out the consistency in that area. I mean, I tell you, it's so impressive. And, you know, you being there, Chris, and, you know, seeing now that this North End project looks to be on pace to be completed before the season starts, you know, Flo Zell with the donation that he gave for the locker room, which will be named after his mother. It's pretty cool stuff. And I want to ask you, because we had the conversation on Current Sports last week about this, just how much of a game changer something like this can be recruiting-wise when it comes to a program like the MSU football team. How big is this project when it comes to recruiting in your eyes, Chris?
Well, I think, and you know, it's a beautiful project. Don't get me wrong. I think it's, you know, aesthetically, especially with the view of campus and the things that they want to do with the recruiting room up on that second floor and the new locker rooms and the open spaces and all the helmets and carpets and things that they've talked about. To me, the biggest thing is just changing what was existing there, because it had been neglected for so long, and that it became really an eyesore that when it's less of what's coming in and more of what's leaving, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Right.
I think that to me is the big thing, because it's no longer, and again, the state-of-the-art facility, so it's beautiful, but not having the concrete slab locker rooms and the cramped areas that were built for players in the 50s and 60s that were much smaller,
right.
and a smaller roster. To me, that is a critical thing, because, you know, that really at times would be an eyesore for a recruit. And having new, nice new things, everybody knows that they love that. But it, more importantly, not seeing the old blemishes is the big thing.
I agree with you on that. Long overdue, right? Long overdue.
Long overdue and done right. I got to give him credit, because, you know, it's obviously still, in a way, somewhat in the infancy stages of the finalization process. But, you know, when you see the diagrams and when you do the walkthrough and see how much room there is and where training rooms are going to be and how much different it is from the old locker rooms, it's remarkably impressive.
It certainly will be. And you know what, Chris, as we talked about this this other area of improvement when it comes to in a certain MSU athletic venue, I actually read your article on it, but the new LED lights that are going to be installed at the Breslin. Now, just to kind of get a clarification, where are these lights going to be? What do they look like? Because I saw you report on it in LSJ.
Yeah, they're going to replace the existing lighting system in the roof and rafters of Breslin. Very similar to what transpired in Munn Arena last summer, where it's more energy efficient for the university's bottom line, but more importantly, it uses less electricity. That the greening of campus has been an issue for President Simon, and, you know, sports venues are some of the ones that have the highest wattage light bulbs and things like that suck up the most energy. So this is, I believe that the folks over at the RHS, I still want to call it RHA, but the RHS, right. Said that this payback, that the light project gets paid back in about 9.5 years from the amount of electricity that will be saved and money from it, which is pretty impressive when you think about how quickly that is. But
at the
same time, when you saw over in Munn, it really brightened the arena. And again, some of that was the reflective nature of the white ice with the lights, but the lights themselves are much brighter and much more of a white light. And the other thing, too, is it's going to allow the operations. One of the things that I didn't get into the article is that they're changing the operation systems with the lights as well, because it's a different system. And what it'll do is it'll allow for for quicker on and off, basically immediate on and off. Whereas when you had the, I believe they were, I want to say they were halogen or CFL, but I think they were halogen.
Yeah, to wait.
That old system, it would take 15, 20 minutes sometimes to warm those lights back up if you turned them off. Now you can do spotlight introductions. You can do all kind of crazy things with different LED lights. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a little bit, I don't want to say a game changer like the North End Zone project, but it certainly adds for a little bit more to the fan experience that really Breslin hasn't been able to do, because we were able to see some of the spotlight nature during the hockey season, during player introductions, the lights out.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting. It'll be really neat to see what Breslin looks like when it gets underway.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's exciting stuff. Well, so I'm pretty sure many Spartan fans out there will be looking forward to that. Hey, there you have it. Chris Solari, MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal. Hey, thanks a lot for joining me today, Chris. You take care.
Anytime, Al. Take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, let's hit the break, folks. When we come back, let's wrap up the Mayweather fight this Saturday. We'll talk a little NBA, talk a little Tigers, who are hot right now. 5 straight for them. You can weigh in on any of it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am now joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Lutke. Guys, how you doing? Good weekend, right?
Good weekend. I can't wait to get into this Mayweather fight, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be good to talk about.
Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Had a fantastic weekend.
It was great. I got to get a chance to go down to Breslin this weekend. A lot of my fraternity brothers graduated, and a few of my fellow friends crossed that stage and even snapped some selfies with Tom Izzo. There were a ton of Tom Izzo selfies out there. It was pretty cool as Tom, you know, attended a few of the graduations, but a great time this weekend. Congrats to all of everyone who graduated this past weekend. That's certainly a great accomplishment in itself, guys. Well, again, it was a great weekend for me. I sat around and watched a lot of sports. I had a fight party for the first time in years. First time at my new apartment. It was a great time. A lot of the fellas came through, and a lot of my close friends who did graduate, they came over and watched the fight. Yeah, I tell you what, it was like, man, I was like a lone ranger in my own apartment, in my own house. I was an enemy in my own house that entire weekend, as everybody is huge Floyd Mayweather fans. I was the only one in the room of about, I'd say it was about 60 or 65 people there in my apartment. It was pretty packed. Only one going for Marcos Maidana, so every time they would, you know how they show the replays after every round, they would always show, they didn't show any. Oh, come on, Showtime, help me out. They didn't show any like replays of Maidana connecting with Mayweather. And every time they were showing in slow-mo, they would all look at me like, oh, look at that now. It just blew up in my apartment, I tell you. It was fun stuff, though. But it was a fun fight to watch. Very competitive fight throughout the first 6 rounds, guys. Marcos Maidana was able to do something I haven't seen in years against Floyd Mayweather, which was give him a cut over the eye. Arguably, Maidana was winning the fight throughout the first 4 rounds. I had Maidana winning all 4 of those rounds. But then we saw Floyd kind of just sit back a little bit into that deep, which I think when Mayweather's career is done, I think it's safe to say that Mayweather will go down as the greatest defensive fighter to ever fight. I mean, it's so, because even though he was, you know, he's cut over the eye, his cut man will work him on in the cutter. Next thing you know, he comes out that round and kind of lays back a little bit into that defensive stance, makes it a little tougher for Maidana, who came at him throughout each round. I mean, it was unbelievable. Made it a street brawl almost. But he was able to pick and choose his spots, and we saw Mayweather of old come through. It was a fantastic fight, though, and the first time we've seen a very competitive fight from Mayweather.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, so you had all these people over rooting for Mayweather. Could you feel the tension in the room for the first few rounds?
I could.
Even though they were showing replays of Mayweather, it wasn't the kind of foregone conclusion that the last, 8 fights have been. I mean, there had to be some real tension there.
Oh, it was. You know, and it was funny because a few of my frat brothers, especially Tyler, who's listening right now, he was watching the fight with me. He's a huge Mayweather fan. He looked at me at the end of the 5th round when Mayweather and Maidana went to the corner. He's like, Al, I don't know about this one. And I looked like, yeah, man. I got a little too cocky when he said that. Like, yeah, it's coming, baby. So you can feel it, man. You know, it kind of got a little silent in the room. Like, okay, maybe we need to rethink this here.
Like,
but Mae
this
Dana,
might actually be happening.
Exactly. Right. It was very interesting to see that moment. You could feel that in the room, that mood change. But after the sixth round, it was like, you know, Mayweather started to make some connections here and there. Like, okay, that's the Mayweather we know. Alex?
Did you ever think for a minute, and I'm not saying that Mayweather doesn't give 100% at all, but did you ever think for a minute that maybe he wanted Madonna to hit him a little bit and make it interesting?
Possibly.
Just a thought.
I did. You know,
because
did
honestly, after watching that and watching the typical Floyd, I think he may, like, there were times where he was back against the ring. You know, Madonna gets him in the corner. Mayweather has both of his gloves up, and Madonna's just hitting him from the side body shots after body shot after body shot. And I'm looking at Mayweather, and usually he'll duck out of the way and move out of the way. There were a lot of times he was just staying in the corner and just getting constantly clocked by Madonna in the body.
Yeah.
Did you notice that too?
I did, you know, but looking at, you know, fights in the past, when he fought De La Hoya and when he fought, you know, Guerrero and whatnot, I mean, Floyd, that's how Floyd fights, though. He believes he's got the best body in the game, and he can take any shot from anybody in the body. So, I mean, that was just kind of his style. But I do agree with you that Floyd knows that a lot of people pay a lot of money for his
fights.
Right,
exactly.
A lot of people come out there to Las Vegas and want to see a show to a degree. So I'm pretty sure that Floyd, especially when he's fighting someone that he knows he can completely dominate, he probably will lay on the ropes a little bit and take a little punishment. But Madonna started to hurt Floyd. And when that cut happened, I think, you know, the cheese hit the fan, and Mayweather's like, okay, let me stop joking around here. Maybe I need to start taking this a little more seriously, because Madonna came out. I mean, he threw over 100 punches in the first round alone.
But he didn't land many of them, and that's a typical fighter against Mayweather.
Yeah, when you look at the stats, and the stats don't tell the whole story in this fight, because if you look at the stats, it looks as though Mayweather dominated, if you look at it. I mean, he connected on over 50% of his punches. Madonna threw more. He was the aggressor. But Mayweather was precise, as he always is. But that does not tell the true story of that fight, because Madonna came out and was the aggressor. He got Floyd a little nervous. And when the last time we talked about Floyd being cut? I mean, he hasn't been cut, and I don't know when. You know, it was a fun fight to watch. And I think a rematch will happen. I think it will happen.
See, now, you guys are maybe taking the angle that Floyd's kind of playing it up. And he is obviously the biggest showman in boxing. I don't think there's anyone who's going to challenge him for that title. But do you also think, like Al was kind of saying, it was just kind of him trying to figure Madonna out? Because all up leading to the fight, it was, man, Madonna throws from every angle. Nobody knows how to defend him. Do you think he was just kind of feeling him out, and then in the later rounds he kind of found his footing, and it was business as usual? Do you think it was just him kind of being like, hey, this is 150 million people watching. maybe I'll make it interesting for
him. I think it may be a combination of both. Now, that was in the back of his head. And he probably thought about it for, who knows, maybe, you know, 10 seconds, 30 seconds. But looking at the way Madonna approached that fight, it was, I think Floyd did, I mean, because that's how boxing is. I mean, in those beginning rounds, you want to feel your fighter out to see, because Mayweather's never fought a guy that, you know, attack, like you said, man, that attacks from all these different various of angles. He, you know, he knows the scouting report, but it's another thing, while reading the scouting report, preparing for it,
and then
being there, you know what I mean? So, I think reality hit him. Like I said, that sixth round is when I think Mayweather kind of woke up and was like, okay, let me rely on my bread and butter, that being my defense. I'm going to lay back a little bit and try to pick and choose when he, you know, because he threw a lot of punches. When he flails out and throws these crazy punches, I'm going to try to find an opening, and he did a great job of finding those openings and connecting.
Second thing I want to talk about with you real quickly about this fight, guys, is the weigh-in. You saw that normally Madonna, it was like 145 and a half. I think that was his normal weight. Mm-hmm. He comes into the ring, he's 165. Did you see that? His weigh-in on the day, he was about 18 to 20 pounds heavier than when he first initially weighed in before the fight. So what I'm wondering, guys, is do you think that Floyd, the reason why Matt said that Floyd may have been stepping back to figure him out, do you think that the amount of weight he put on made him more aggressive, or do you think that he was just stronger in that fight? Because if you look at his past fights, he wasn't that aggressive. I mean, he was probably more accurate in his past fights that I've seen and I've watched before.
You know, I think arguably, I mean, because that's someone, I mean, because he weighed in at 165. Now, Madonna weighed in, at, like you said, Alex, at 146.5 pounds on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I mean, he stepped on the scale Friday, a day before. The day after. So he weighs in at 145 on Thursday. Friday, he weighs in at 165. That's 18.5 pounds in less than 24 hours. That's unhealthy. I mean, when you go straight to Burger King or McDonald's, I mean, that's unhealthy. And I think that might have kind of slowed him down, if you ask me. I would think that's not healthy. I mean, gaining 18 pounds in one day, come on.
I mean, but how much of that do you think was Burger King and McDonald's, and how much was that actually muscle?
I think most of it was muscle. I had to talk to a doctor on that one, but to gain, not all of it's going to be muscle. If you gain
so he
that
had
much,
to have been like starving himself yes. up for that first weigh-in, and yeah. then he gets all his water weight back.
In one
I'm
day.
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But maybe that's just his strategy. I'm going to go for broke, get as big as I can, you know, have all this extra weight so that when I do hit him, because I'm going to be throwing wild punches the entire bout, like, if I do hit him, maybe it has a little extra on it, and it'll get him out of, you know, out of his
possibly. Office. We'll have to ask Ollie easily about that.
I
want to
know about that, because that can't be healthy. I mean, gaining 18 pounds in less than 24 hours. I've never heard. That's crazy.
Yeah, him or Mike Ball. Let's talk to them about
definitely.
That.
We have Austin on the line. Austin is on line one. How you doing, Austin? Welcome to Current Sports.
Al, I'm all right. How you doing today, man?
Hey, and Austin just graduated, right?
Yeah, man. I graduated last Saturday.
Congratulations, man. My brother. Congratulations. What's going on?
Appreciate it, man. Before I pose my question, I just want to say I went to the same high school as Floyd. I'm from Grand Rapids. You know, we're from Grand Rapids. We don't get startled. We know we're going to take
Gun
care
Rue
of
is what you call it there,
just
right?
Just like I do you on the golf course, Al.
Stop that's it. We don't want to go there.
But no, I'm not sure if it was Alex or the other guy that just said, do you think it was Floyd's strategy to kind of sit back and relax
or
Matt, whatever?
Right, Matt just
and,
said that.
Yeah, Max. And my question to you guys is, do you think Floyd went into this fight with the mindset that it'll possibly be a rematch? So do you think that's kind of why he kind of sat back, just to get a feel for him? So in the rematch fight, he'll just be able to dominate him because he knows, like, his style.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, a question like that, Austin, it kind of goes into the kind of, you kind of want to dive into the mentality of Mayweather, which I don't know in this fight. I mean, but before this fight happened, Austin, I mean, the name that I heard over and over and over again, if Floyd had the typical dominating presence that he's had in the past, is that Amir Khan was going to be his next challenger, which is why Amir Khan was on that undercard before Floyd took the ring with Marcos Maidana. They wanted to see kind of how he fought. Is he a worthy competitor? Which Amir Khan was very impressive. I watched all the undercard fights. Amir Khan looked very, very good. And depending on what ensued, if it was going to be a dominating performance like Floyd's other fights, Amir Khan was going to step in the ring with Floyd. And coming from Floyd's camp, it looked as though the vibe was that that's going to be the next fight. They did not expect Maidana to be as big as a competitor as he was throughout that fight, in my eyes, coming from me.
Exactly. That's how I felt, too.
Right. Hey, Austin, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, I'm moving to Indianapolis for a job, so we got to hit the golf course before I get out of here.
Let's do it. Al Woods, baby, and Austin Mickelson. Let's do it, man.
All right,
hey,
man.
Thanks a lot for the call, Austin.
Yeah, no problem.
But yeah, it was so interesting, though, man, because and Floyd came out and said it, too, after the fight. I mean, he went out and tweeted, you know, he came during an interview and said that, finally, I had somebody who put up a competitive fight and not just because he said, normally I just blow out guys. And that's saying a lot coming from the cocky presence that is Floyd Mayweather. He gave him high praise even before the fight. I mean, he gave him a lot of high praise, and a lot of had to do with Adrian Broner, who we also saw that night on the undercard, who looked a little weary. Watching that Adrian Broner fight the first few rounds, I thought he was losing the fight and then came on in the later rounds. But, you know, Broner being his little brother and the connection that they have and looking at how he beat Broner, he came in a little weary and gave him his props. Anybody that can beat Broner, who's an up-and-coming young fighter, he wants to approach this fight smart and not get too cocky with it. In all honesty, that's the first time I've seen Floyd give a fighter his props before the fight and deservingly so after. So that's saying a lot. Now, I would love to see a rematch because I thought it was one of the best boxing matches I've seen in quite some time. It was fun to watch. But overall, I was wrong.
Seeing that kind of plays into the maybe he was playing it up a little bit because now.
You think he was?
Well, just purely in hindsight. Purely in hindsight because you look at it and now people are clamoring for a rematch.
Right.
Now he's going to sell more pay-per-views for a rematch that maybe ordinarily he'd have to move on to Amir Khan, like you were saying.
Right.
Now we can get two victories
right.
for the price of one.
Right.
Make another $500 million. You know, it's the business of boxing is always there. And Floyd is the biggest name in the game.
Right.
So it's interesting to think about it from that perspective that maybe he's just kind of setting himself up for another payday. against the same fighter. Maybe he was legitimately surprised because, you know, the cut is the cut. I mean, and, you know, up until this point, I feel like people thought Floyd was a Terminator.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Just dominant.
Doesn't bleed.
Robot.
He's a robot. He looked human. So maybe that's definitely piquing people's interest. Maybe people who wouldn't ordinarily, let's go watch another Floyd fight. Maybe now they're kind of thinking, hey, this guy's beatable. We might see him fall soon. I'd love to see the rematch. Because more than anything, the prevailing thought out of that fight was, can't wait for the next bout. Can't wait for the rematch. Want to see these two again. And when's the last time that happened with Floyd?
Oh, never. I can't remember the last time that's happened. So, yeah, I mean, definitely the business of boxing is so complex. And, you know, I think Floyd would certainly embrace the rematch, I think, because, I mean, he got – you know, I saw something on Instagram. I'm going to bring it up during the second break, but it was an interesting breakdown of Floyd's money that night. Like, he got paid, like, something crazy, like $14,000 per minute, something like – it was the breakdown is nuts. So he's very smart when it comes to selling a fight. He knows about the business of boxing as well as any other fighter in the game. He's a money man. He's Floyd Money Mayweather. And now he has the opportunity to possibly have, because if this rematch happens, it'll happen at the end of this year or the beginning, the very beginning of next year. That could be the first time we've seen two Floyd Mayweather fights in the same year since Lord knows when. And that means double pay. And possibly, I have to look up how much money he actually made off this fight when it comes to endorsements and whatnot, not just the legitimacy of the whole deal made by his team and whatnot. But I'm pretty sure if the rematch happens, he could have a chance to eclipse what he made on Saturday.
He's got
to
get that Clippers money.
Exactly.
He's got to start saving for the Clippers.
Right, yeah. Exactly, guys.
And the other thing was, if you all remember when he fought Guerrero, that was supposed to be the big fight that he never had. And what I mean by that is there's always been criticism that Floyd's never had a legitimate fighter. He's never had to face a De La Hoya again. He's never had to face that. He's never had that big fight that really has people doubting.
He's never had that Frazier to his Ali.
Exactly.
Never.
And that was supposed to be the Guerrero fight. And now you look at Maidana, who's inflicting more damage this time around. And now it's on Showtime. This is an HBO. When he left that, then you're wondering, okay, well, where's the money coming from? Because if he had the big fight, it was a no-brainer. He beat him by a long shot. The last fight, beat him by a long shot. Now you have this fight. I'm just wondering if the ratings are tanking a little bit. Because it's the typical Mayweather fight. I feel like people are expecting him to have the typical 10-round defensive fight. And he's not knocking anybody out. Mm. So do you see where I'm coming from? Where are the ratings at right now? I don't think they're as high as they once was.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, his last fight was the highest grossing fight in the history of boxing. I haven't seen the numbers on this fight, and I'm curious to see if they've gone up or down. It's going to be hard to eclipse that last fight, but you know, it just shows you that people are still starving for boxing, which is encouraging for me because I'm such a big boxing guy. I grew up on it with my grandfather back in the day. And I thought, honestly, we had a discussion here in the summertime, is boxing dying? Because all you have is Floyd. If Floyd's not fighting, I'm going to be honest, I'm not paying for a fight. I'm not paying pay-per-view for a fight unless I see Floyd Mayweather because no other fighter interests me. And it shows that, you know, with especially his last fight, with it being the highest grossing fight in the history of boxing, people still are starving to see someone that compels them in the ring. It's not dying completely because Floyd Mayweather is proving that. But with Floyd having now another 12-round decision, that is the typical outcome, but doing it in a different fashion, fighting a fighter who's going to give you a run for their money, we'll see if that goes up. We'll see if it kind of even kills out. I'm curious to see anybody who out there who other than me purchased the fight because that'd be interesting to dive into as well, guys. When we come back, let's talk a little NBA playoffs because boy, oh boy, was it arguably the best first round in the history of the game. We'll be right back. Current Sports returns in just a second. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, reminding you all that you can call in and weigh in on anything we're talking about, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. When we have a caller right now, Apachu, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you getting me in.
Yeah.
I just want to say, you guys, last week we were talking about Jameson and the issue about his draft status and a couple other things. I just wanted to comment on that.
Yeah.
We know from past history it's not going to affect your draft status whatsoever. If you can throw that ball and score touchdowns and win games, that's all that counts. I cannot forget that there's a very high possibility that a murderer won the MVP of a Super Bowl. I just can't get past that.
Yeah, well, Ray Lewis, yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on. Case, you got some idiots right now are playing for all these different teams. They get bounced around because they won't behave yet. They make big money. So to me, that's not an issue. Integrity is not an issue going into the NFL, the NBA, anything like that. The thing that bothers me about Jameson, okay, and I got nothing against him personally, what bothered me last year was that law enforcement, okay, for the state of Florida, took their time addressing this issue. This is something that could have been dealt with in a few days, but it took months and months and months. And as we got closer to the playoffs, okay, we got closer to the decision. And it just bothered me that anybody else, okay, any black man, brown man, even white man, poor white man, would have been treated differently by law enforcement. So more so than Jameson, it's our system of justice that's in question and not him. And you see this happen every time there's a celebrity that has incredible financial wealth or accessibility to wealth, that this issue comes up. We saw with Paris Hilton. He got treated better than Paris Hilton.
Right.
At least he went to jail.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
At least he went to jail. You know, and then the idea of somebody stealing oysters or whatever it was,
yeah.
You know, if you're going to break the law, man, get paid. You know? if you're going to break the law, go under the table. Don't go over there to the grocery store and steal some food. So to me, it says he's not very, very smart. And I'm not trying to defend him, but I'm not trying to go against him. The rape case to me was a serious issue, man. I got a granddaughter, and if she was in that situation, I would like a hearing. I would like for it to be taken seriously. It doesn't take, what was it, a year and a half?
It was pretty long,
this
yeah.
issue to be resolved. So it's law enforcement in this issue that bothered me. And you guys were saying that he's spoiled and da-da this and that. Well, you know what? It's because he's treated that way.
Mm.
Treat him like an average Joe and he get his head right. As long as you give him special, and we see this all the time, you get athletes special privileges. And if you're a star, you get special privileges. And I'm sick of it. They get away with stuff and they just get worse. They don't get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They don't get better. I just wanted to say that I was just shocked that somebody, one of you guys is saying that it would affect his draft status. I don't think so. I don't think so whatsoever, man. You know, they want ball players. We see time and time again. You got owners that are racist. You know, and that doesn't affect anybody. You know, I didn't know anything about this guy from L.A. until the stuff broke out. Okay, and evidently he had a long history of doing what he was doing. And had it not been for that, the fact that the athletes stood up and said, we're going to challenge this, we wouldn't have known much then. Because I didn't know anything about his past. So it's special treatment. They're all getting special treatment. And that's what's disturbing, you know. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your show.
Yeah, hey, thanks a lot, Apache. And I think Apache makes an interesting point. Because, you know, when the Jameis Winston story came out, guys, there was a very compelling article written by, I forget the writer, I read so much stuff, man. I think it was on Yahoo Sports. But he talked about how, you know, this Jameis Winston crab leg incident, him stealing the crab legs and walking out without paying, ideally he stole it, it had to be, you know, just another example of the university enabling this kind of action from Jameis. You know, looking at his past, we broke down the past incidences he's had and run-ins with the law before. I mean, walking out and not paying for a drink at, was it Burger King or something like that. I mean, he's had these little incidences. Of course, the big one being the rape case, just like Apache just alluded to. But the university and how they dealt with him is kind of like, all right, slap on the wrist, don't do it again. Each time he's done that.
Well, the same thing happened with J. Rue Campbell when he got his plea. I mean, it's the same exact thing, even in high school.
It's different. It's a little different because you're talking about a university here with Florida State University. I mean, J. Rue's still in high school, for goodness sake.
You don't think
but the way that
the fact that he still has offers has nothing to do with that?
Well, but my point is the way that the Florida State has handled the small, quote-unquote, small incidences of Jameis Winston has made him kind of look at the situation and said, okay, if I'm just going to slap on a wrist for the outrageous behavior that I'm doing, or they don't seem to think it's outrageous, I'm going to keep on doing it. You know what I mean? And that type of enabling behavior, I kind of agree with Apache. You feel as though you're above the world. You're this athlete. And even looking at, if you go back to the rape case, remember the officer when he approaches the young woman who is accusing Jameis of the incident, he goes up to her and says, yo, do you know what you're doing here? You know what I mean? Do you know who you're accusing of sexual assault? You're talking about Jameis Winston here, the biggest name in our athletic. I mean, what kind of police officer goes and says that to a victim possibly of rape? that type of aura, the special privileges and the outlook that you have on a superstar athlete, it's that type of behavior and that type of quote that makes you, you know, just your overall perception of just our society and the way we treat the, we put these athletes on a pedestal, it does kind of change your perception in that way. And I can see where
I see that. But I do think that there are a lot of positive actions being done. I mean, look at all this huge federal investigation right now with about 55 around the country being investigated with how they handle sexual assault. I think that's a good sign. I mean, when was the last time we saw a federal action, something like that? So I think that there's a lot to be hopeful for with that.
Well, the only good sign I see is that somebody had the courtesy to go back and dig up how they're – because I thought that – I mean, this is 55 universities we're talking about that allegedly mishandled the way that sexual assault cases have been alluded to when it comes to, you know, athletes, and I can go on and on and on. 55. That's not encouraging for me when I look at that stat.
But they can go on the record and say – We're targeting the schools that didn't do anything about something like Jameis Winston. We're targeting that exact kind of case. They can't say that when they're talking about 55 schools being investigated, but I guarantee you that case with Jameis Winston is the exact example of what they're kind of going after.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, even here, they're investigating. We can go back to Adrian Payne and Keith Appling. That incident was – they say that incident wasn't treated right, which is why Michigan State is on one of those lists of being one of those schools – out of the 55, Matt.
Yeah, it's, you know, any public action and federal action, I guess, is good. But at the same time, we are just scratching the surface.
We are.
Because this is, you know, a kind of long-standing procedure. You know, this has been happening for decades. I mean, the big-time athlete gets preferential treatment. That's nothing new. I mean, that's not like it's groundbreaking stuff. It's just now everything is so readily available at the moment. You know, the internet has made it so that people know, the public knows just as much as probably the schools do because information is everywhere. So you're getting kind of the outrage from the public that maybe you wouldn't have before, and now you're kind of seeing concrete examples of this stuff happening. So I think things are maybe starting to change, but, I mean, we are at the tip of the iceberg right now. I mean, there's a long way to go until everything is kind of cleaned up. You know, we've got all this stuff with the unionization in the NCAA, protecting athletes, and now athletes are getting preferential treatment. In general, the NCAA is kind of a mess, and they've got a lot of problems that they need to sort out. This I would put near the top of the list, though. This is a big deal, and like you said, things are changing, but it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on there. It's going to be very interesting. We talk about those 55 schools, Alex, to see what ensues after this now. What's the next step? So, guys, really quickly, we're only a minute left. We'll talk about this tomorrow. The NBA playoffs, just the biggest surprise in the NBA playoffs now is the second round kind of embarks. I kind of felt for watching that game last night. Man, do I feel for the city of Toronto. So close. Brooklyn, they pulled it out in the last minutes, but, man, it was entertaining to see. Congrats to the LA Clippers getting past Golden State. A fight broke out after that game, actually. Fun first round.
Yeah, Steph Curry for me and Damian Lillard. Those guys are...
Damian Lillard hitting that shot. The last 5 minutes of that game were crazy.
It was crazy. It was good stuff. All right, we'll dive more into it tomorrow. Thank you to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKRE East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic start to your week. And be easy, people.